Hugo Dislop from Farming Secrets. We've got online Erica and Nick Dibden. They're from Tilba Tilba Valley, or from Tilba. So Nick and Erica, who wants to go first? Or both? Both if you don't talk together. But can you give a bit of a rundown of what you do up there?
What we do here is we have a dairy farm and a cheese factory, primarily. And we now use most of our milk through our own factories. But what else would you like me to say, Hugo?
Yep. So you've got Jersey cows, right?
Yes, indeed.
And how many cows you're milking?
So we milk about 200 at the moment.
Okay. And who helps you on the farm? How many people on the farm?
I've got a young couple who primarily run the farm.
Yeah.
And they do the milking, the calves, the dry cows, and general herd management. And
right.
I do paddock work and everything else pretty much.
Right. Well, I've got a question from a lady who's got a peach orchard, and I might as well get straight into the questions because we're going to open up the line, and farmers are on the line. We've got half a dozen farmers on the line. We'll just let them have a bit of a say as well. This is a particular question from Lorraine Martin. They've got, I'll just read that. It says, Nick, we have a 4-hectare stone fruit orchard which we need to shortly lime. You talked about mixing humus with lime. What is the rate of humus to lime? What form of humus do you use, and where can you purchase it? We live just north of you in the Shoalhaven. We have started making our own compost, but only a small amount. Last year we spread lime and then spread some commercial compost over it. That's it. It just says a little bit of guesswork. So what sort of humus did you use, and what was the rate?
Okay, well, originally we used... We started using a lot of composted turkey manure here, but
yep.
It wasn't very well composted, and in the end we were having bits of turkey flinging around the farm. We went off and did a course with Wylad at Young, or the Midwest compost system, of how to make compost correctly, and we've bought compost from them at Young. And we spread that on the farm. Not a very heavy rate, but the difference between compost that is composted correctly or simply compost that you make yourself is a vastly different product altogether. And the product coming out of Wylad at Young is a fully stable, it's almost like a clay in the end. And you'd have to go and have a look at it, really, to understand it, I think.
Yeah, no, I think I have seen some. Now, what proportion of that went out with the lime? Or what rate did lime go out, and what's the rate did the compost go out?
Right, we put lime out here at about... we're fairly lime... We need a lot of lime in this country here. And we put lime out at about half a tonne per hectare a year, pretty much. Although we haven't in the last year, simply because of... farm economics with very low dairy prices. We've done very little of anything, in fact, apart from our own fertiliser that we mix up ourselves.
Right. Well,
so about half a tonne per hectare of lime and probably 250 kilos of humus.
Yeah, well, you've answered the question perfectly. Do you do a soil test and do the liming and fertilisers in conjunction with the soil test?
We used to, but in recent years we haven't, and mainly because I don't think we're getting a soil test shows you very little of what's going on in the soil, really. So we have very high aluminium toxicity here, and the only way to change that is to keep putting lime on. And we've dramatically changed the way grass grows on this farm without doing soil tests now for probably 5 years.
Right.
And the last soil test that we're done here were done by Bega Cheese, I don't use them at all, really.
Yeah. You can't start reading your grass, etc., can't you?
Absolutely.
And you had a bit of input from, what was Arthur's second name, the BD?
Arthur Dakin and Catherine.
Yeah.
And
do you do anything on the BD side now?
Well, we still put out TM21, which is a very, in my view, a very similar product to BD or cow horn preparation.
Okay.
Product, and it's but we don't do the cow horn preparation now at all, and we spray the farm twice a year with the enzymes from TM21.
Okay. Look, I'm going to open up the line, and if anyone wants to have a chat, they can just ask Nick a question. Nick, are you on the line by yourself, or you've got Erica there with you?
No, Erica's here, but she's not. We only got one phone, so.
Oh, okay.
So if anybody wants to ask their question, I can give it to them. Pretty easy.
Yeah. Look, to anyone who wants to answer a question, press star 7 and start talking. Very easy. Press star 7. If that's too hard, I'll open up the line. We can all have a chat then. Matt, have you got any questions to ask? Well, we'll open up the line. I think it'll make life a bit easier. Yeah, anyone can have a chat now, just start talking. Does anyone want to ask a question at this stage?
Hello.
Yep.
Hello, it's Matthew Butler here. I'm a dairy farmer from Tasmania. I'm on the northwest coast of Tasmania. I'd just like to congratulate Nick and Erica on what they've been doing on their farm and then how they've gone one step further and, instead of just milk, supplying milk to the factory to go on to make, full tilt milk and making cheese and then selling it. And, well done on that. A couple of questions on about the actual farm and that. You're saying how much grain you use and then how much silage you got. Would it be ever look to say using less grain and then use more of your homegrown silage? We're cutting the grain out, or it's just what I noticed you had a mixing wagon there, or is that just what they recommend to use with the mixing wagon?
Yep. Am I on, Hugo? Or?
Yeah, no,
yeah.
You're right. The line's open, anyone can have a chat.
Okay. We were supplying Bega cheese, or have done for the last 15 years, and then in the last 5 years we've slowly moved towards our own factory. And in fact, within about 8 weeks from now, we'll all of our milk produced on this farm will go through our own factory. Now that's obviously going to have significant advantages as far as milk price goes for us as time goes on. But milk price, I don't know what's going on in Tasmania, but milk prices here are pretty poor.
It is poor here as well. Yep.
It's dreadful. Like, it's not poor. It's absolutely horrific. In fact, and I suspect if they don't change things pretty soon, they're not going to have an industry at all. But so as far as we have been a fairly, we feed about a ton or so grain per cow per year. We're just looking at perhaps we might change that and cut that right back, and use our silage that we haven't used a lot of. And that would significantly increase our profitability, even though we supply ourselves. And even that we're supplying our own milk to our own factory, we still have to be realistic with price back to the farm. And so I think all inputs, and we're no different to any other farm. And every other cost has gone up or tripled or quadrupled or gone up tenfold, some of them. And our milk price is falling, so it's so a lot of what we do has been necessity rather than you're forced to take a line that you have to take to survive, and so we're certainly we produce a lot of grass silage, but that's costly as well.
Yep.
And it costs a lot to put it in the under a stack, and it costs a lot to leave it there because you're not using it. But Yeah, what was the other question with that?
Another question is, like you said, you've made maize silage. Well, I made my silage for 3 years running, but then and 2 years after that we had the two wet summers, so I didn't mow my silage. But then this year we've got a bone dry here at the moment,
yep.
We're irrigating. But
yep.
I'm looking at putting crops in the early spring sort of thing, working out the paddocks and not producing as much, and putting crops in, but not just a single species, like anything up to 8 or 10 different species in the paddock. So
yep.
therefore, and then like when it comes to now, I've got a looking at a paddock that's up to waist high or even higher food for the cows that I sort of strip feed. So
yep.
as instead of making the spring, surplus of silage, putting crops in and then beating the crops off as a, like the last year I put a crop in for 6 hectares and they was equivalent to say 180 bales of silage for me.
Yep,
like
yep.
what it's saying in silage over a month period right at the end of towards the end of summer, and that's what I'm sort of looking at doing now. And by putting crops in, I'm going to improve pasture once the crops come out, so I'm looking probably cropping for probably 2 or 3 years when one crop comes out and another crop in and things like that. And
yep.
And they're saving me doing a lot of making silage and then turning it all out sort of thing again.
That's expensive.
Yeah.
We our farm here is predominantly a summer grass kaikui farm.
Yep.
And it hasn't always been, but we've let the whole thing pretty much go to kaikui. We cut it off hard in autumn, and then we sow
yep.
ryegrass into that, which then grows all through winter, and sometimes
yep.
put oats in as well. But as soon as you start ordering in the seed bags, the bills at the end of the month are pretty horrific sometimes.
Yeah.
And so if you can get something to grow, even if the production is not as high,
yeah.
And we all know you're going to get the most production off ryegrass that's 6 inches high and in perfect length. But
yes.
It's not. It simply doesn't pay the bills to do it.
Yeah.
So we're quite happy to have pasture that's not quite as perfect, but lots of it.
Yep.
And I think that's the only way with very low milk prices to survive, but I might be wrong.
Yeah. Thanks for that.
No worries.
Nick, is it normal for you to have a 2-year supply of silage ahead, or is it just a...
We've got more silage now than we've ever had.
Yeah,
and there's two reasons for that too. 2 years ago, we halved our herd, sold half the cows, and to reduce, we were going backwards supplying vast volumes of milk, and so we cut the herd back, and we actually made more money with half the cows and half the cost, and practically no wages. But so we had a bulk of feed. We had a lot of feed. The farm's 600 acres here, and we had a couple of good seasons. And this last summer was tight, but we haven't used any silage at all, still. And
excellent. If there's anyone on I know there's quite a few farms on the line. So if you want to ask a question, just start talking. Because then we'll just accommodate you somehow.
You go. We're most happy for anybody to come here and have a look through at the operation and have a look at the factory if they wish to.
Well, you're a very very busy man, so it's extremely generous of you to make that to offer that.
Our view is that the more small operations like our cheese factory that get going anywhere around the country, the better it is for everybody. And so if we can help anybody who's got an idea of doing what we've done, then we're happy to go.
Now you've got a website. So
yep.
What's your website so farmers can look you up?
Southcoastcheese.com, www.southcoastcheese. And
that'll
pull up our farm and website and factory and cafe and the whole thing. And
Nick, what inspired you to start bottling milk and how have you sort of gone about it and how's it going so far?
the actual milk, but we'd always planned on building the factory, and the milk was sort of thought as an add-on thing that we weren't too sure how it would go, but we started bottling milk in late November, early December this last year. We're already up to about 6,500 litres a week now going into bottles, and that's pretty much tripled our farm gate value, but it doesn't come without a bit of cost, of course, or effort. But I can see a great future in bottling real milk.
Right. And what do people think? What are the customers thinking of the milk? What's the feedback?
Yeah, no, it's been very good indeed. It's been fantastic, and in a lot of the we haven't got into Woolworths or Coles yet, but we probably will. But we're in all the little IGAs and whatnot, and they're telling us that our sales are outstripping the cheap milk sales now, because it's actually got real milk in the bottle with cream on top, and people are prepared to pay. And we're charging a lot more than the low price. So our milk is retailing at $4.60 for 2 litres, which is a fair bit higher than the standard milk. But it's going very well.
So people are obviously coming back to buy more.
Absolutely, it's growing every week. In fact, it's grown every week since we started putting it out there. We've not had a.
You'll have to restrict who you sell to at this rate, rather than.
No. We're just talking to other farmers now in the local area that have got high complainers herds, and anybody that's got a product that will produce the milk that we want will. We'll look at buying milk from, and I'd expect that'll be in about 6 weeks or so. We'll be looking for other milk. So,
but you'll be judging the farmer on the quality. It's not going. You're not going to not just accept anything. Would that be a fair statement?
No. Absolutely. Yeah. We want high protein, high fat milk that looks different and tastes different.
Good.
And is different.
Good. And,
hello, Nick and Hugo.
Please,
hello.
Please, fire away. Who
is it? It's Jason Maloney here. How are you going, guys?
Oh, Jason, so pleased you got on the phone.
Yeah,
fire
mate.
Away, Jason.
Jason,
can you tell people where you are?
No worries at all. I'm a dairy farmer in the Southern Highlands of New South Wales, a little town called Robertson.
Yep.
We're a family-run operation. Milking 220 cows at the moment, but looking at growing our herd up to over 300 cows. Being a family-run dairy since 1862, and never had any real fertiliser or herbicide, pesticides inputs on the place. We're sort of just farming naturally, and have done pretty well our whole lifetimes. I'm the fifth generation on the farm, and certainly just promote healthy soils and. Believe that healthy soils, lead to healthy and fertile cows. But one question I do have for you at the moment, Nick, and it's something I've been been struggling with for a couple of years now, is cell counts.
Yep.
Really trying to keep our cell counts down and under control. Naturally, I'm really, really struggling at that. Our cell count hovers around the 300,000 all the time. And, no matter what we do, we're really struggling to get it down. we can get it down to 200,000, but it's not for a very long time. Then all of a sudden it spikes back up. Wondering what sort of method you use at keeping your cell counts low and what your cell count actually runs at.
Yep. Well, on this farm here, it depends who's milking. So
yep.
The biggest reason for cell count is the milkers, I'm not suggesting on your farm that that's an issue, but here it is. And we spray our cows with iodine. And
yep.
if I'm milking by myself all the time, the cell count I can see it go down day on day on day.
Right.
And if I don't milk, it pretty much goes the other way. But our cell count here is around, we sit on between 100 and 150, 130 maybe.
All right.
But look, spraying is the most important thing. But getting rid of those cows that do you herd record or?
No, not we haven't herd recorded now for about 10 years.
Right. Well, from our farm here, the only way we can really control, because you can have one cow that can be throwing your cell count over the top, and it might be one cow with a very, very high cell count, and the rest of your herd might be perfect. And the trick is to be able to herd record without it costing you an arm and a leg.
Oh, that's certainly the key, and that's the main reason we stopped herd recording, was just because of the cost of it.
Yeah. But and we stop and start with herd recording, and I tend to herd record when we get a spike. But,
right.
And we don't have a lot of clinical mastitis here. But when we do get a spike, it's a cow that you can't tell there's any problem with at all, really.
That's ironic that you say that, Nick, because we don't really have much clinical mastitis at all. Like, we can go for months and not even see a mastitis clot on the filter.
Exactly what happens. Yep, that happens.
Yeah.
We don't. Now, I've recently discovered too that. And you think you never stop learning, but if you're game to taste each quarter of every cow in your herd, milk should taste sweet.
Yeah, that's
and,
right.
If you taste a salty quarter, you've got a cell count in that quarter, and I can pretty much go through my herd now just with my own tongue, and I'll work out who's got a cell count and which quarter it's in. And you don't
that's
have to drink it, you just got to stick your tongue in it.
That's actually not a bad idea. You can do that quite easily.
It works like a charm. But
yeah.
some people won't do it, and my staff won't do it. But you can taste it. So cell count quarter, put your tongue in it, it's as salty as anything. And the other milk will be sweet it should be sweet like sugar.
Yeah.
So that's a good way of testing milk. And if you've got a cow you're not sure about, that's what I do every time.
That's a good point.
That works. It does work, and it's very cheap. It costs you nothing.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Can you see yourself doing that?
Oh, without a doubt, Hugo. Without a doubt, I'll be starting that first thing in the morning.
You just got to make sure you go clean your hand, mate. Clean your hand and clean it between each quarter. And And you can taste it.
Yeah, fair enough.
But no, look, I've got no real. Make sure we don't change our rubberware unless it's breaking now. Particularly now with milk prices so low, you can't afford to be chucking your rubberware out every 5 minutes.
That's exactly right. One thing we did with our rubberware was we actually built a new dairy 10 years ago.
Yep.
But when we built that, we transferred from rubber to silicon.
Okay, yep.
And that has just made a dramatic difference in teeth health of the cows and cleanliness in the dairy.
Right, you can see what's going on.
That's certainly been a fantastic change. Going silicon, that's for sure.
Okay. Well, we've got one of the oldest herringbone dairies on the coast here. Our dairy is very old. But an old dairy, but we still milk 100 cows an hour without any problem at all. And, without spending another $800,000 on a new dairy.
There's no doubt. There's no doubt they're a bit pricey, especially with milk prices at the moment. I know you said that
they
couldn't
afford to milk. But we don't have any problem. I still believe that if you spray correctly and nice and quiet in the dairy, quiet with your cows, you'll have a lot less problem with cell count.
Yeah. Then question.
Yeah, you're always going to have cell count. If you've got cows, you're going to have a cell count, and occasionally you're going to have a blowout. No matter what you do.
Yeah, that's right. Just another question, Nick. Is you said that your farm is now predominantly Kaikuyu summer grass.
Yep.
But before that, I take it you would have done a lot of spraying of it early in the piece to kill it off back.
Not necessarily. Yeah. Not necessarily to kill it off, but more to try and grow improved pastures and such. And then come summer, you had absolutely nothing in the paddock.
My question to you is, mate, up here in the Highlands, because our growing window is so short.
Okay.
I'm trying to promote as much Kaikuyu as I can.
Yep.
Do you have any real secrets in being able to promote Kaikuyu growth?
Rain.
Yeah.
Rain's the best fertilizer of all. But look, we cut it off, and this year I haven't cut it as much as I normally would. But we hammer it. I've got a fairly big topper, and we cut it as hard as I can to the ground. And
right.
The more you can cut it to the ground, the better it'll grow, and the better quality the faster it comes up.
All right. And
going into autumn, we try and pick that when it's just starting to go off, and we'll often just broadcast ryegrass or oats into it when you've got a bulk of maybe 150 mils high, and then cut it off, smash it off.
Okay.
And that makes the seed bed, and then the ryegrass comes up through it. If you don't get your timing right, you'll get the Kaikuyu growing up and choking it out before it gets going. But if you time it just right, you can get a beautiful ryegrass crop going for the winter.
Yep.
And then you don't get any bogging either, because the kike mat will hold it up, and you can have a wet. Like, we get pretty wet here in the winter often, and we can graze every paddock on the farm now. We don't have any problem with cows. We do grow a bit of maize here occasionally, and often the maize paddock which we plough, the maize paddock you can't get on in the winter. It's just a bog hole.
Yeah. Okay. We can't really grow maize up here. It's just too short a window. We've sort of got about a limit of 90 days where we have temperatures that hover around that 30 degrees.
Right.
And to get maize to grow is probably a bit hard. We usually, if we do go for a summer crop, we certainly push sorghum.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
We find we can, we're safe with getting at least a crop off it.
Yeah.
Up here, I'm certainly trying to promote Kaikuyu as best I can. This area hasn't really seen Kaikuyu, and I don't know, my grandfather used to say, oh, we don't want that Kaikuyu growing up here. Look at how it grows down the coast. But, you go down the coast now, and I was actually down at Badalla just a week ago.
Right.
And, you just see green feed everywhere, and then
there's
no feed up here in the summer unless you've got a crop growing. So.
And I went into Bega this afternoon, and in Bega they spend half their life spraying that Kaikuyu.
Yeah.
Because they've been told for years that Kaikuyu is the enemy, and they haven't got a blade of grass to feed themselves in there. And you've got these massive herds of cows standing on dirt,
It just doesn't make sense, does it?
It doesn't make sense, no. We can go, even when it's really dry, we were pretty dry here over summer, and then we got about 48 mils of rain, and within a week we had beautiful green food.
Yeah,
we did nothing, nothing at all. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a tremendous grass when you get a bit of water on it, when it is dry, and everything else is dead, but it'll jump away in a flash. And so, I don't know. What else can I tell you?
Is there anyone else who's got a question to ask? And look, by the way, can we can folks try to keep out the background noise, because we've got open line and we can just pick up all the noises. So, anyway, anyone else who want to ask a question? Well, Nick, if we haven't got people to ask questions, what else? Anything you want to sort of say about the farm, or about the area, as far as what other people are doing, and as far as farmers go? There's plenty of dairy farms in the Tilba Valley.
Oh no! Look, in the Tilba Valley here, there's only three other farms, but in the Bega Valley, of course, we've got a fair few. Most of the people I speak to in the Bega Valley are wondering how the hell they're going to survive this. These milk prices where they are, and costs going through the roof. And I fear for anybody that doesn't have either a family-run operation with no staff, or they don't have some form of off-farm income to try and prop them up, because there's some pretty sad stories around Bega.
Well, I was talking to a farmer down at Camp down in Victoria, and he reckons the amount of farmers that have given up dairying and the banks closing up on them, and he's a grazer. He's got cattle and sheep, but it's quite frightening when you hear things like that.
It's pretty frightening around here. Absolutely, and when you ring up the our co-op, Big Achieve, and they just shake their head and say that's just the way it is. Bad luck, piss off and go and survive. Well, it won't work like that anymore. We've got huge costs and I just don't know where it's going to end the way it's going. And good farmers, a lot of good farmers in around Bega who are really, really struggling from what I hear. And,
if someone wants to supply you milk, how do they get milk to your factory? And how?
Well, at the moment, at the moment we move our own milk from the farm to the factory. As soon as we start going to other farms, I'm either going to have my own tanker or a contractor.
Gotcha.
And I'm not too sure just which way that's going to go. But
fair enough.
I don't have enough time to be running around really to pick up milk, but it's all a very a new thing for us too, and it's rapidly
changing. Cross that bridge when you come to it.
We will indeed. But we're always interested in what's going on, and if anybody is interested in supplying us, they should contact us.
They can contact us via us.
We'll
just have a bit of a chat to them, see what they're on about, and direct them to you if we think it's appropriate. Because I do appreciate you've got three businesses to run, I've got a lot on your hands.
Oh yes, indeed. But so is everybody else. And we're just trying to get to a different spot in the industry, but I hope everybody else can survive this nonsense and the dollar litre milk disappears and the industry goes forward as it should. It's a great industry with a great future if it's allowed to operate how it should.
Yeah. I was reading in the Land newspaper where they say there's quite a shortage of milk in the Queensland area, so I'm not too sure how they're going to cope with that.
Well, from what I read, there's a shortage in Queensland and there's a shortage in New South Wales, and they're shunting milk from New South Wales to Queensland and from Victoria to New South Wales. But they won't pay the New South Wales farmers what they should because they can control the price if they do it the other way. Obviously costing them. And to send, Woolworths and Coles are selling milk in Darwin, for Christ's sakes, at $1 a litre. Where they've got to bottle it in somewhere in Queensland and ship it for 3,000 kilometres to Darwin. It's an absolute nonsense.
It is. It's nonsense. It's madness.
And it's not Woolworths and Coles milk either. That's the whole problem with the whole thing. One would think that it was Woolworths and Coles with their own dairies and their own factories, but it's our co-ops and our companies that are selling milk to these big supermarkets for nothing.
Yeah,
and expecting us to survive, we as farmers need to be a whole heap more militant and stand up and go and tip milk down the drains or tip it down the supermarket shelves or something.
Yeah,
and
keep it on their doorstep. Yeah.
We've got to stop being so passive and stand up to them.
No, I think it's a very good point, Nick.
Yeah.
So as you say, you're inviting people to. Come and have a look at your operation.
Absolutely, send us an email and make a time and no problem at all.
Now, has anyone else got any questions? Because I won't keep Nick on the line any longer. Anyone else want to ask questions before we just wind it all up? Okay, Nick.
Nick, it's Jason Maloney here again.
Yep.
Would like to touch a bit more on how you got into wanting to process your own milk and make your own cheese, and what was your main drive behind wanting to do that, and did you just find a passion with it? I know just in life for myself and my father on our place, our goal is that we'd love to put in our own processing plant so that we can be self-sufficient. And that's one of the reasons why we're looking at increasing cow numbers at the moment to try and increase our income, so we can look at doing that in the next couple of years. The question is, how do you get to being where you are from, and how you found the passion and what drove you to to go in this direction?
Okay, well, our start in the industry was my wife making cheese at the kitchen table in the house here. She just decided she was going to start fiddling around. And then one day she saw a Dairy Australia scholarship advertised, and she applied through Dairy Australia to do this scholarship, and she won the Australia-wide competition. And that was probably the starting point, and they sent her then to nearly every factory in Australia and to England, Italy and France. And that was over a 12-month period, and she was pretty much gone the whole time. And
wow.
That was her passion, really. That got me thinking then, well, you know, I'm always looking outside the square, and if everybody runs north, I'll run south, usually. And,
yeah.
So I sort of started thinking, well, where do we go from here? And then there was a little up at Badalla, which is where you were the other day.
Yeah.
There was a little cheese plant there that bought in base cheese, ground it up, and mixed it up into flavoured cheeses and sold it on again. And that
right.
was up for sale, so we bought that. And we fiddled around there for about nearly 6 years, making different cheese and slowly building the market up and spreading further and further north. And we actually sell a fair bit of cheese in Robinson up where you are there.
Okay.
But always with the goal of having our own farm cheese factory on the farm. And
yep.
We then had to fight with the Yirrabella Shire Council for 3 years to get approval to build a factory here. And that took forever and ever and cost a fortune.
Yep.
And when we finally got approval, we ended up not even going ahead, and we bought the old ABC cheese factory up in town.
Okay.
And so it's been a bit of a journey of not really terribly planned, really, other than to know that I can't see a future in the industry the way it's going now. And we've been milking now for 15 years here. I'm actually a carpenter by trade. I'm not a farmer, really. And,
right.
And but I have a passion for cows and a passion for the land. And so we started on a lease farm originally, and then we slowly moved off that and then bought this farm. And then and one thing or another, we've sort of got to where we are. Really, a lot of it's just been determination to get to a different spot, I think.
Okay.
And but I think it's exactly what you should be doing up there on the tableland, without a doubt.
Yeah, it's certainly something we're looking into. So.
But your idea of getting bigger, milking more cows, I suspect it might cost you a lot of money.
Yeah, it's not something we're over keen on wanting to do, but we've got to have
better
cash
yeah.
flow.
I know what you're saying, but the problem with that is, and we tried it here, and when the weather's with you, it's fantastic. But when the weather goes against you in the big herd, it's an absolute disaster. And in 1 year here, we lost $300,000.
Yeah.
Feeding the cows. We had absolutely not a single blade of grass on the farm for a year. So every single
yep.
mouthful came off the back of the truck. And
yep.
with 400 cows and 400 replacements and whatnot, and... It was absolutely horrid. So you can get, if you can double the value of your product and produce half as much on your farm, you're in the same spot. So,
yeah, I certainly hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
Jason, what sort of cows have you got up there, and you might want to talk to Nick about the jerseys and why he's selected jerseys.
Yeah, well, we're Holsteins and Illawarras. We've had jerseys through the herd, but we on our farm we're not fans of the Jersey cow. We really lean towards the Illawarra cows more than anything.
Yep.
They seem to suit our property the best. They hold their flesh well. They've got high fertility. They're a pretty well low maintenance cow, and Holsteins have been here pretty well forever, so that's why we've still got them here. But they're the two breeds
we certainly work with, and obviously there's crossbreeds and that filtered through. There's not too many of them. There's only a handful of crossbreeds, really. It's predominantly Holstein Illawarra herd.
I don't think it matters what breed of cow you've got particularly. It's more that you enjoy milking that type of cow, and that's what you go with. That's the way it goes. We milk cows because I actually started with Holsteins and straight Holsteins and big producing Holsteins, and we did have some issues with penalties from the factory for butter fat and proteins. That's pretty much why we changed. And this farm, our farm here, is very low. Most of the farm is swamp country. And I couldn't keep the cows, the Holsteins, on their feet. It was just they weren't practical for this country. But it's like the saying, if you've got Illawarras or you've got whatever you've got, doesn't matter. If that's what your passion is, then that's what you should go with. But I don't know about Illawarra milk, but if you have a straight, low-testing Holstein herd, you'll have difficulty having a different product in the supermarket. You've got to have a product. You can't just try and sell the same as everybody else.
Our test is certainly is fairly good year round. We probably average probably around a 3.9 fat and 3.1 protein.
That's an average
all year round.
That's not
too bad.
There's plenty of fellows around here that are forever in penalty and there. Forever trying to lift their fat test by feeding straw or something and lowering their production. Jason, but if you're most welcome to come down that and have a look at our operation.
I'll certainly probably be looking into doing that, Nick. That'd be excellent.
No problem at all.
Thank you very much.
No problem.
Thanks, Jason. Anyone else wants to ask a question? Otherwise, I will wind it up. Well, Nick, I think we will wind it up. Thank you very much for coming to the phone. And thank you for being so generous in explaining what you're doing and so generous in inviting people to see what you're doing. And I think the point that you're making is that farmers, if they can possibly become more independent of the people who affect their prices, I know it's very hard to get to the point where you've got to, so it's an absolute credit to you, and I just hopefully that you inspire other farmers to basically be more profitable in either reducing their costs or having a better price for their end product.
Yep, that's right, but it's certainly, we've had some issues too, and I'm quite happy to share them with anybody about with our journey to our own factory. It's not been easy. But one thing I'll say you go is that if you do the same tomorrow as you did yesterday, the result will be exactly the same.
Well, it's worse than that because your price keeps going down.
Absolutely, or it'll be worse. That's right. You've got to take control, and you've got to be prepared to not toe the line.
Yeah.
And we're certainly do our best to. Do it the best. Look, we don't do it. We don't necessarily do it right, but we do it the best we can, and that's about the only way you can do it.
Yeah. Well, on that note, Nick, do you want to sum up because we will say goodbye and
okay,
we'll close,
yep.
close it off. Is that it,
well,
Nick?
That's it. Thank you, Hugo.
Nick, have you anything else you want to sum up on?
No, that's good. No, if anybody that's wants good. To contact us. If you want to come through the factory, you need to make an appointment so that we know you're coming.
Course. Well, I think suggest they do it through us in any way so we can sort of help them along a bit too. So, Nick, thank you. Nick and Erica, thank you very, very much for allowing us to interview you. And I'm sure the farmers I know the farmers will get great value out of it. So thank you very much, and it's a goodbye from me.
Okay. Thanks, Hugo.
Thanks, Nick. All the best. Bye.